Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hello, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet one person at a time. Today we have this wonderful person whose her work is really new to me, and I just completely enjoyed reading it. We have Kate Jaggetti, and she is such an interesting person. She's been a British television presenter and an author with a really strong background in both science and mysticism, and they come together in her in such a beautiful way. But she's developed this very intense sort of devotional love of an author named Neville Goddard, and has taken his writings from the New Thought movement and really updated them, brought them into a form that's very accessible and amazing to read. And it seems to me that it's really about the power to use our imagination to create the reality that that we want to have in our life. And I thought her book was lovely and charming. So thank you so much for being on the show with me today, Kate.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me. It's great to be here.
So I just have to say, I mean, I'm pretty well read up on, you know, in the personal growth and philosophy and spirituality world, and never heard of this guy, Neville Goddard. Who is he? And why are you so in love with his work?
Okay, so I was introduced to New Thought as a child. I was very young when my mum started to read to us from different types of authors. And when I was a teenager, she introduced me to Neville Goddard by giving me a copy of his book, Five Lessons. And it was all about introducing the origin of the Bible, its purpose, what imagination is, what God is, and all of that. And I was really taken by his philosophy. He himself is a fascinating character. He was born on the island of Barbados in 1905 to an English family, but they weren't the traditional colonial wealthy family. They were a family of very modest means, a large family, 9 boys and 1 girl. And Neville left Barbados as a teenager. He traveled to New York to pursue a career on stage. And even though he had some success at it, it wasn't satisfying the hunger he had inside himself. And he was able to express it or have that hunger satiated, if you like, when he met an Ethiopian rabbi by the name of Abdullah, who taught him Kabbalah and the Bible and mysticism, and birthed Neville's ministry. So he's a fascinating character. He didn't consider himself a New Thought author, which is interesting, even though that's the genre he is very much associated with.
And can you tell us a little bit more about the New Thought? Because I bet that's a new, you know, concept for some of our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. New Thought is really old thought. It's the idea that at source, what lives or resides in all human beings is this unifying substance which comes from the creation or the source of all that is created. Now, in New Thought, it's not really religious in a traditional sense of the word. So if you hear the word God, they don't mean it in a traditionally religious way. And you can yourself use any word you wish to express what you might mean by the source from which everything originates, from the greatest to the smallest subatomic particle, whatever it is. And so it's saying that this power that is the source of creation resides in all of us, and that it expresses as our individual human beings, and through our humanity, we are able to engage in the world around us. We're here to learn something about ourselves, to develop and to evolve as souls, and then to return to source at the end of our journey. So that's pretty much the philosophy in a nutshell. What we do in practical terms with New Thought is use it to be creative or expressive in different ways while navigating our way through life.
Wow, that's beautiful. I mean, it sounds a lot like what I believe, you know, that sort of that divine spark, you know, it resides inside of all of us, inside of all of creation. And it sounds very metaphysical in a way.
Absolutely. And that's pretty much what Neville's work was known as. It was his own metaphysics. It was metaphysics that he wanted people to be able to understand. So he tried to strip back a lot of the esoteric language and just put it in very practical terms and say, look, these are ideas that you are already familiar with because you are living these ideas. I'm just going to show you or help you to understand that better.
And it sounds like from your book that you had sort of a push-pull, a love, hate, reject, accept kind of relationship with this material throughout your life.
I mean, for me, I did love it, but it came to me at a time when I was kind of grappling with my own beliefs and an understanding of religion and sort of not wanting to be part of a traditional religious system. And but when Neville was talking about the fact that the Bible is not historical, it's an allegorical document, it's about the psychology of man, I found that a little bit offensive to start with because I didn't fully understand. But what I love about Neville is that it's very practical and hands-on. So you're then engaged with it through experimentation, and then you as you experiment and you get results, you start to feel some shifts taking place. And it depends on the individual and how strongly they hold their beliefs, but shifts can be very jarring experiences until you actually emerge on the other side and you've made all of these wonderful new discoveries. So there was that for me in the beginning, and then when I thought I understood it and something terrible happened to me and I thought, this shouldn't be happening to me if I'm a practitioner of this philosophy. But then through that trauma, I was able to evolve again by going back over what I thought I knew and then emerging this person I am today.
Mm-hmm. It was a real spiritual transformation for you.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was fun. It was an interesting thing. And I loved how you wrote in your own process about, you know, sort of your deeper struggles with, you know, I think when we're real on a real spiritual journey, it's not like academic. It's something that shows up in our life, like in a really powerful way that we have to wrestle with like that. And it seems like that really is what happened for you.
Absolutely. And that's why I lay such heavy emphasis on the practical side of things by giving exercises so that people are able to test all of the ideas that I'm presenting to them right away. I always say that if a philosophy has no practical application, then it has no value. If you're not able to actually see it at work in your life, or if you cannot relate to it in a tangible way, then it doesn't have any meaning for the individual. And this is very much about us evolving, if you like, or transforming. And I wanted to get that message across.
I love that. I agree with you too. And I think it doesn't really have much point if it doesn't make our lives better in some way. Like that's
absolutely
what we're all seeking, you know, betterment of ourselves in some way. So can you give us just a little, an outline? I know it's really, it has some similarities to Law of Attraction. I liked it a bit more, you know, actually, truthfully. I'm not a terrible, huge fan of a lot of what passes for Law of Attraction stuff now, but I really liked what you were talking about. And I'm wondering if you can explain the sort of the technology or the idea behind this.
Yeah, so without criticizing the Law of Attraction or the people that are proponents of it, I think what happens with those sorts of ideas or in the way that they're disseminated is that people feel that there is a separate power on the outside of them, and that through some faculty of self, you're going to be able to attract things to yourself. This philosophy is actually teaching you that the power of creation from which those things emerge exists in you already, and that what you need to do is reestablish a connection between your humanity and your divinity, or your authentic being, if you like. Now, this is not as radical as it seems. When we're talking about your divinity or authenticity and all of that, we're actually referring to an innate sense of awareness, your consciousness. That is the power that we're talking about. So it's not about attracting things from the outside. It's about becoming aware of the fact that those things exist within you and just need to be expressed through you as you give consent to them. Now, me, I don't offer explanations about how that happens. And some people have tried and given sort of vague references to quantum physics and all of that. I avoid all of that. All I'm saying is that there is this power from which everything emanates. And when you become aware of something, that's a desire. Okay, so we've been taught that a desire is something you want. That's not the case. In metaphysics, a desire is an awareness that something is now available to you, and it's seeking expression through you. And you contact it by getting into the feeling of possession. And once you do that, it will show up. It will find its way into your world in its physical form.
That's so cool. I love how you explained that. And I don't know, what just hit me when you were talking about that is it's almost like if we have that divine spark in us, our soul, if our soul is desiring it and that filters down into our human being as a want or a desire, and then we just connect to that part where it's already part of our soul in a way, and then we can create it.
Absolutely. And Neville always says, think in terms of contact rather than sort of something that needs to be made somewhere in some sort of heavenly factory. These things already exist in consciousness, and you've just become aware of them. And it's just about fine-tuning your feelings or adjusting your consciousness so that you come into contact with it.
And you talk about using your imagination as the way to do that.
Yeah. So continue, Lisa.
Oh, no, I just want to hear, because I love imagination is so much different than like your thoughts in a way. You know, I mean, my thoughts are quite unruly and all over the place. But my imagination, I love my imagination. It's so childlike and full of energy and full of emotion and full of love. And what I got from reading your book was that it's our imagination that is actually able to help us get to create these things.
Absolutely. Now, in metaphysics, what I mean by imagination is the human imagination is God, this source that I was talking about throughout this interview. So what we've been taught is that the imagination is a faculty of the human mind that enables us to perceive things that aren't physically real. But what we're saying is that whatever we conceive of in consciousness is already an immediate fact. It's just not visible in the world that we inhabit. And so our imagination enables us not only to contact those things that already exist or to conceive of or to create new things, but it enables us to be a conduit through which those things appear. So I want people to start to think of this gift that they were born with, this innate power or source of creation, as being the means through which everything they desire comes into the world. And when you're able to embrace and engage that, it actually expands. You feel yourself growing. And also you reposition yourself as the creator of your own experiences. Now, that's not to say that there are things that won't happen to you on the outside, which are part of your growth and development and learning, but you reposition yourself as the person who determines how you respond to things, what shows up, what you can eliminate, and all of that. You become the creator of your own experience.
That's so cool. Can you give us an example of where you've seen that in your own life or in other people's lives?
Okay, so I had a TV interview to record in New York, and so this is just a simple sort of example of how imagination or imaginative power works. At the time when I had to go, my husband and I didn't have the finance spare because we had other things to attend to. But what I was able to do in imagination was place myself in New York and not give any concern to how I was going to get there. And when I was able to, it's not just visualizing, I enter into the image, and I describe all of this in the book. And that means I engage with New York in my mind, but I use what we call our subjective senses. So if you think about the five senses we physically possess, we also possess them in our authentic being, the invisible being that we are. And I was able to engage New York, taste, see, hear, and all the rest of it in my imagination. As I remained in that picture, it took on, as Neville would say, the tones of reality. So that's to say, my feeling of being in New York mentally was indistinguishable from my feeling of being there naturally. And it so happened that the means for me to get there showed up miraculously. We went to a wedding, my husband and I, and someone approached him and said, look, I need you to help me sell some land, because that's what my husband does for his business. And here's the commission up front. And all of the money that I needed for my trip to have a great time was provided. So this is what happens. It brings you, when you operate your power in this way, it brings you into alignment with the things that see that desire fulfilled.
That's so cool. I love your book is filled with these beautiful exercises that were really fun. Can you tell us a little bit about the exercises, or maybe which is your favorite one?
I mean, I live by them all. And then the way I am now, because I've been doing this for such a long time, it's I kind of just go with what I'm inspired to do. But what I've done in the book is done exercises that build. So as you go through the chapters, you're becoming more familiar with this faculty of yourself, not faculty, but this aspect or quality of yourself that enables you to establish a strong connection between the world of consciousness, the invisible realm of creativity, and your humanity. So I think for me, the exercise I do like to say to anybody, because this works for anybody no matter what level you're at, is, excuse me, it's called Believing the Unbelievable. That's the chapter. And it's the one in which you actually sleep in a particular mood. So if you think about when you're going to sleep, there are no demands made of you. And you don't need to sort of pressure yourself to believe things that you're unfamiliar with. All you're doing is training yourself to recognize the correlation between the mood that you're in or the way you feel and the experiences you have. So if you think about going to sleep in a very positive mood, you're then going to see how that is reflected in the experiences that you have the next day. And through doing this, people already start to take a closer look at this relationship between who they believe themselves to be and who they truly are. And you can start from there. It makes it easy, I think, to start to engage with your authentic being if you're unfamiliar with this type of work. The exercises at in the very first chapter are also a great way to start. You're going to look at yourself uncritically and you're going to look at yourself uncritically and then begin to ask yourself internal questions about who you are.
I just thought, and I tried some of them, and I'm like waiting to see what'll happen. Like, I can't wait to see if things come to being. But I thought they were very fun and also quite practical. There's like a practicality about this method and about you, and I think probably about Neville Goddard, that seems I can see the very powerful, authentic spirituality and metaphysicality about this. Like, but it doesn't have, like, it's not really fluffy, you know? It seems really practical, and I love that.
I mean, that was really important for me. I always say to people, I don't want them to take what I'm saying at face value. I want them to build their own record of evidence, and they're only going to be able to do that through experimentation. The great thing about it is that even if you are skeptical or disinclined to believe, through even experimenting, you will begin to experience the shifts that I'm talking about. And that's in that way you can have your own reference point and start to explore. It's not about me feeding someone something. It's about helping them to discover who they truly are.
Yeah, I love it. And you talked about this process that he came up with that's called revision. And I thought that was very powerful. Can you explain that a little bit?
So that's based on the premise that all of our experiences are imagined anyway. And so if you have gone through something in the past that is having, as Neville says, you've gone through something in the past and you're experiencing the present day evil as a result of that event, you can change it in your imagination. Now, I want to be very careful. I want to make sure that people understand that when we talk about changing it, you're reliving it as you wish it had gone. Now, if you think about somebody losing a loved one, they're not going to be able to undo the death of that loved one. But what happens is that if they are able to go through a different process of grieving or something like that, it can help them become unstuck in the present. So it's something, it can help you get past something in your present that you feel you're unable to push past by reliving the event in imagination and then going to that point of reality, as I was talking about before. So you're experiencing that event until it feels real, until you've convinced yourself that it is real. And in the present, you're brought into an alignment with a present that would have been yours had that event been the case.
It's very interesting. I think there are a lot of different psychological techniques that use similar, and a lot of spiritual traditions actually that use spiritual similar things, because it's like that part of our psyche that can't, that part of our psyche where those things lodge, can't really tell the difference between something that's happening in, quote, reality, versus something that's happening with such, with our imagination very finely tuned, the way you're talking about it.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. So it's a great way. And I love that because it helps people to recognize that these are ideas that they're probably already more familiar with than they realize.
What, do you ever run across people that tell you they don't have an imagination or they can't do that kind of visualization?
I suppose people's, the kind of feedback I get is that I've tried it and it hasn't worked. So what I do is I say to people, this is actually very different than something like visualization. So you're not looking at yourself doing something in your mind. You're entering into a picture and making it real. And once you do that, you're going to bring its reality into alignment with yourself. So I don't have one, but it's kind of... it doesn't work or that sort of thing. But what I say to them is if they follow the exercises as described, because they are different, they will finally get the results they're looking for.
I just brought that up because sometimes I meet people who have a hard time kind of really engaging the part of themselves that that can create a vivid imaginative experience. But I would imagine that that's something that we can, like a muscle that we can develop when we really practice.
Absolutely. That's something that can be overcome. Part of this work is actually starting to learn the language of feeling. So that's the language through which we communicate from our beings to this world of consciousness. And what I say to people is to start a very, very simple exercise. Doesn't require any ability to visualize, if you like, although I don't talk about visualization. But what you can do is just start to think of different things and notice how you feel in response to those things. And that starts the process. It's very simple, but it's a great way to stir up this faculty of themselves. So just start to notice, if you think about an animal, someone you love, some your favorite food, just notice how you feel in response, and that's actually part of this picture, and they can start there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I think if you kind of layer your senses on it, like, well, what does that favorite food smell like, and what does it, you know, taste like in your mouth, we can kind of fill in that all the edges so that we're having a full experience of it.
Absolutely. I love that. Thank you for mentioning that.
That's awesome. What do you think Neville would think of this book?
I think he would like it. I think he'd be very pleased because what I've done is I want the ideas to be recognized as the philosophy he taught and as the philosophy that changed my life. But also I think he'd be happy that it's accessible to absolutely everyone. I think his own language, his style was a little bit esoteric. But this makes it very, very easy for everybody to understand.
And when did he write? When did he write his stuff? Like, what was his time frame?
So he wrote throughout his life books and then lectures. His first book was written in 1938, published in 1941. And he was writing right up until the end of his life. In I think his last lectures were around about 1970, 71. Mm-hmm. But yes, he was... always on the radio, and he had a TV show at one time, so he was constantly sharing his message.
Yeah, and you talk about his writings as the lectures are available on the internet. Like, you Google the name of the lecture and then you can find his source material that way.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah.
That's really cool because it seems like it makes it very accessible to people. Like, you might not happen to have Neville Goddard in their library at home, you know, or can't get their hands on his actual work that way.
And it's fantastic because a lot of people who read the stuff free online feel that they want that book, the books, because the books make it so intimate. And I'm no matter what I read online, if I think, yes, this is for me, I'm going to go out and get the book. So it does inspire people in that way.
That's good. And, I'm sure he would be thrilled because your book it's really fabulous and clear and powerful. And I really hope everyone, I decided that I'm going to dedicate some time trying to really work through this and work on creating and manifesting some things for myself in my life. So I'm going to take it for a trial run and see how it goes.
Fantastic. And I'd love to hear what results.
I love this kind of thing. And I just think it does, fit with this, where we are in our the evolution of humanity, as we become more evolved and more conscious, we have the ability to create, you know, to connect. I don't know, like, I love what you said, like, we're not creating it in some, like, cosmic factory, but to connect with those things that are there for us.
Absolutely.
So how can people find you and your work?
Okay, so the best way is through Facebook, facebook.com/Katherine Jaggedi author. So it's KatherineJaggedi author, all one word, on Facebook, or penguinrandomhouse.com. Just search for me under authors, search for me by my name, and there's information about the book and about me.
Yeah, that's right. And we have a link to it too on the radio, on Power Radio. So you can come to empowerradio.com and The Miracle of Healing, which is, you know, where you can find the link to Kate's work. And thank you so much, Kate, for being with us. I know it's late at night for you, or you're in London, and thank you for staying up to have
thank
this
you,
conversation
Lisa.
With me. It was wonderful.
I had a wonderful time. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank all of you guys today for joining me on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time here on Empower Radio.